Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, and welcome to a very special edition of Roker Report. I'm Chris Wynne, and today we are fortunate enough to be speaking to someone who was an incredible player and servant for Sunderland, who first signed for the club 1 month before I was born, which is scary, and his fourth spell with the club ended only 3 years ago. He made 270 appearances for Sunderland over three spells as a player and held either the role of first team coach or assistant manager under four different Sunderland managers over the years, according to my quick tally anyway. We, of course, privileged to be talking to Paul Bracewell. Welcome, Paul.
Welcome. Good evening.
Yeah, great to speak to you. First of all, how are you keeping during these strange times?
Yes, well, thanks. Obviously, it's been difficult for everybody, but just making sure that we stick to the rules and
yeah, have you been able to keep busy?
Yeah, there's plenty going on. I've been working from home on Zoom and Teams, but I'm working down at Tottenham at the moment, and the lads are on. They usually have June off, so it's given me plenty of time to get all the stuff done around the house, like most people. Gardens, cars, you name it, it's been getting done.
Good stuff. So I want to circle back to your current roles towards the end, but I want to get straight into your career because, I mean, what a career for a start. And I'm obviously desperate to get onto the Sunderland spells. But, I mean, I want to take you straight back to all the way back to Stoke as you make your breakthrough, 17, 18-year-old. And it's Alan Durbin who sees your potential as he's just taken Stoke back into Division One. How much of an influence was Alan Durbin in those early years?
Yeah, I was 15 at the time, left school and got offered an apprenticeship at Stoke. Like you said, Alan was the manager at the time. In those days, an apprenticeship was an apprenticeship. Long days, long hours. Tony Lacey was my youth coach at the time. Really enjoyed my spell there. Managed to make my debut at 17. Came on as sub against Wolves and then made my first full debut for Stoke. I think it was against Liverpool at Anfield. So welcome to the big time, as they say. Enjoyed my spell there. And Alan left and went up to Sunderland. I think I stayed there for another year. And then I joined him after that.
Yeah, was it a surprise when Alan Durbin left to take the Sunderland job?
Yeah, I think it was. It was a surprise. Enjoyed working with him. Howard Kendall was there at the time as one of the coaches. Dennis Smith was playing. I played alongside Dennis as well. So later on in my career, obviously, there's a connection with those two. Alan left and that was it.
Yeah, I think Dennis Smith was suffering with his injuries by the time he came through. But as you said, it takes him. I think it took him a couple of years. In June 1983, you parted with about $250,000 to bring you to Roker Park for your first spell. Was that move all about linking up again with Durbin?
Yeah, I was out of contract, and in those days it was different to what it was now. They agreed a fee of I think it was like you said $250,000. Travelled up, and obviously I'd worked with Alan before, so I knew him. But for me, it was I think I was 19. It was a big move, obviously, going to a big club like Sunderland. A lot of pressure, a lot of expectation. First time that I'd gone to, obviously, a new area, new club, new dressing room, new teammates. It was all very new for me as well. But obviously, was looking forward to the challenge.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're still only 21 at the time, so it must have been a huge move.
Yeah, like I said, it's when you work with young players until you've actually moved club, because if you've been at a club, you know, since I was 15 and you get to know everybody and everybody knows you, and then you're uprooted and you move, and it's a totally new experience. You're walking into a dressing room, everybody's looking at you, what's he all about, you know. But no, I enjoyed the first, you know, I was there at the time for 3 years, but I was only there for one season.
Yeah. And I mean, in so many cases in the history of Sunderland, the 83-84 season when you were there was, of course, one of turmoil in the boardroom, as it always is. And despite we were kind of 4 points clear at the drop, building a decent side with the likes of obviously yourself and Nick Pickering, Barry Venison, Sean Elliott, Leighton James was in there. And then, well, obviously with the turmoil with Tom Curry, I mean, Durban is sacked after an away defeat to Manchester United and replaced by Len Ashurst. I mean, were the thoughts in your mind that you might kind of need to leave as soon as Alan Durban left that year?
Not really. It was a surprise to everybody, you know, not only to the players, I think the supporters as well, because I think they were seeing signs of Alan building a young team, ambitious. There was a nice blend of youth and experience. You know, you've named a few players there. A lot of those players went on as well in their career. So signs were looking good. I was obviously disappointed Alan left. That was me sort of first sort of sense of the manager getting sacked. Len Ashurst came in, had played for the club before, and we got to the end of the season and he wanted to bring his own people in. He wanted to generate some money to do that. And obviously I was sold so he could go and do his business.
Yeah, and I mean, what I read, I mean, obviously you were player of the season that year, and you know, there was a mass exodus over the next year or two. I mean, a lot of fans thought that team could have kicked on given the time. How much potential do you think that side had?
Yeah, like I said, it was a nice mixture of youth with some experienced players in there as well. It was a good sort of feeling, I think, between the team and the supporters. I think they sensed something. But in football, you just never know. Things happen, you know, very quickly. And like I said, a lot of the players, you know, met with one or two further along. But at the time, there was some exciting players there, you know.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you make a huge leap up the football ladder when you move to FA Cup holders Everton. Howard Kendall parts with just under £500,000 to take you to Merseyside. I mean, I can't imagine that would have taken too much kind of twisting the arm to sign for Everton at that point. But was it a lot to do with Howard Kendall being there as well?
I think, to be honest, it was the season finished. Like I said, I think they were looking to generate cash. The season finished and I was with the under-21s European Championships, and we had a home and away leg in the final. So season had finished and I was travelling down to, I think Sunderland and Everton had agreed a fee. I was travelling down to Heathrow. I was flying out with the under-21s, and me and my dad met Howard in the hotel. Obviously, I knew Howard from when he was player coach at Stoke. So again, there was a sort of relationship there. We agreed everything and didn't sign a contract, but we shook on it. I flew out with the under-21s, and it was that week they had the cup final, and came back and we won the European Championships, which was massive. I don't think it's ever been won since. So that was in 1985. And then everything that we agreed, they won the FA Cup final, which was great, against Watford. So I was joining the FA Cup finalists, and away I went, you know.
Yeah, away you went. I mean, what a first season. I mean, one of the best in Everton's history, I think. Won the First Division title, UEFA Cup Winners' Cup, won the Charity Shield. One that got away maybe was runners-up in the FA Cup. And first season, I mean, you almost make 60 appearances in all competitions. And incredibly, you're only 22 throughout this season. Is it safe to say that was your best in football?
Yeah, it was a very unique season. We were, you know, if we'd have won the FA Cup, that would have been the treble, you know, as well as the Charity Shield. And, you know, in today's game, if you said that you had a chance to win the treble, it just shows you how hard and how difficult that is. And I think you mentioned 60. I think with the international games, we were well into the 70s that season. Mm-hmm. But I was joining a club. My first game was at Wembley against Liverpool and Charity Shield. We won that. We got beat the first two games of that season. And then, like you said, we went on to win the league, which was, you know, that everybody's dream about that. And then obviously with Europe as well, winning that. And then obviously we're so disappointed in the first FA Cup final as well against Man United.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely incredible first season. Obviously in the middle with Peter Reid. I mean, did you two just kind of gel immediately in the middle of midfield and get a rhythm going?
Yeah, I think it was a sort of mutual respect, mutual understanding. All across the field, there were some good players full of internationals. And they always say the first trophy's the most difficult, and they'd obviously won that, the FA Cup against Watford, so they'd had a taste of it and they wanted more. And you know, I went into a dressing room where obviously I wanted to be successful, but there was a lot of good players in there, a lot of good people, and a real hunger and desire to be successful.
Yeah, and I mean, at the end of that season as well, just you were capped three times by England, and your first was that summer of 1985 against West Germany, I think, according to what I was reading. And you were just about to turn 23 when you got your first cap. Did you feel like you were ready for international football, or, I mean, how did you find that experience?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think I made my debut. It was a World Cup qualifier against Northern Ireland. That springs to mind. And then the same... that year, 85, 86 team, that was the one that was pre-Mexico. So we'd finished we finished the FA Cup in May, and then we went straight out to Mexico for 2 weeks, and we had a week in America on the way back. And that was the sort of pre-squad for Mexico, which again was a, you know, fantastic honour to play for your country. And like you said, for me, it was hopefully just the start of things to come, you know?
Yeah, I mean, again, I mean, we're going to the following season, and you and Everton are flying again. I mean, you said you were pushing for a place in the 86 World Cup squad, and then you take a challenge from Newcastle United's Billy Whitehurst on New Year's Day 1986, and you suffer what you first think is a broken ankle, but then develops into a bit of a mystery that takes 2.5 years to solve and recover from. I mean, obviously, during that time, you clearly suffered physically, but I imagine to be out for that length of time after that initial success was kind of mentally tough to go through.
Yeah, I mean, when something like that happened, no injury is a good time, but for me, it was a nightmare to miss, you know, 2.5 years when you're coming into your prime, not only with Everton, but with England as well. The frustration was, like you said, initially thought it was broken, it wasn't, then there was some bone, we removed the bone, then you go into plaster for 6 weeks, then you do your rehab, then I was breaking down again. So I'd had 5 operations over that period, and, you know, 2 years is a long time to be out. But I always believed that I would get back. And I eventually went to America to see a guy called Roger Mann, who was the top guy in the world on ankles. And they managed to find the piece of bone, and they operated there, came back. And then I managed to get back playing again. But no, you're right. You know, physically, mentally, it was a real tough time. Having seen the other side of the coin, as they say, having been successful and then not being able to do what you want to do, get up in the morning and go and play football, was soul destroying at times. But I always had the belief I was going to come back and play.
Incredible. I mean, you eventually make it back, as you said, which was incredible during the 1988-89 season. And your last game for Everton was that emotional 1989 FA Cup final against Liverpool, only 5 weeks after Hillsborough. I mean, obviously FA Cup finals are always huge games, but I mean, I imagine this one felt different to the other cup finals you played in.
Yeah, it was the first all Merseyside, you know, cup final, and obviously because of the situation, and it was always going to be difficult. But I think huge respect to both sort of players and clubs. It was a great occasion and fitting tribute, really.
Would you say at this point you were still kind of finding your fitness, or were you kind of feeling 100%?
Yeah, I mean, people say what you tend to do, rule of thumb is if you're out for 6 months, you know, it sometimes takes you sort of 4 or 5 months to get back. You know, I was out for well over 2 years, which is a big chunk. So I was still trying to get myself back. I knew I wasn't going to be the player I was before. In terms of medicals, I was never going to pass a medical. I had 50% less movement in one side, the ankle, and the other. But, you know, I was back playing football, which was brilliant.
Yeah, and I mean, with that, even before that cup final, I mean, did you feel or even know that was going to be your last game for Everton?
Not really. It was, I think Colin Harvey took over. You know, I remember playing away at, I think it was Sheffield Wednesday when I came back after injury, and there was about 5,000 or 6,000 Evertonians there. And I just remember the reception. It was, you know, it was incredible, really, that they hadn't forgotten about you. You know, they remembered you, but I always knew, you know, I was going to have to change my game a little bit because of the injury. And then obviously I think pre-season came round, and I knew I wasn't going to be involved as much. And that's when I spoke with Colin and said, look, I need to go and play football. I've been out for an awful long time. And at the moment, you know, the best thing for me is to go and play football and go on loan. So I spoke to Dennis Smith again, the connection when I was at Stoke. Dennis was the manager at the time. And we agreed to go up for a month and just see how it goes. And I think that first month, there were 6 games in that month. And I know things went well, again, because I'd been there before, knew what the club was about and how big it could be. But for me, it was again playing football. And then someone wanted to sign me. And I always remember on the Tuesday, I think was my last game, and they did a medical and the doc came in and, you know, the usual, no, he doesn't pass. And then he went up and he watched the last game, the doctor, and said, I can't believe that's the same guy that I've, you know, just examined. And And that was it. It was one of those where he's not going to pass the medical, but if you want to sign him, you can sign him, you know.
I was recently lucky enough to speak to Dennis Smith, and I think this kind of conversation came up. And I think the way he put it, he got the news that he'd failed. And I think he just turned to you and said, "Do you feel all right?" And you went, "Yep." And you went, "That's good enough for me," or something along those lines.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, and throughout my career, now we had the same story at Newcastle. You know, people, you fail a medical, but people look at your record in terms of games. You know, I proved myself I could play games. All it was an exclusion on the contract that if I broke down, it was the ankle, then obviously there was no insurance money. But I was out there playing. Like I said, the doctor watched the game, and he was gobsmacked. So I signed, and you know, had 3 years there.
Yeah, I mean, even despite the time you had out, I mean, looking back now, it seems strange that you kind of dropped down to Division Two. And I was reading back through the newspaper cuttings at the time, and there was kind of the rumours flying left, right and centre about where you were going to sign permanently. And one of the rumours that Newcastle were coming in as well. I mean, did you have any other options on the table other than Sunderland to sign permanently?
No, to be honest, like I said, I actually asked Colin, can I speak to Dennis? I rang Dennis and said, look, you know, do you want to take me? And he said, look, I need to speak to the chairman, but love to come up. And that's how it came about. And to be honest, I was, you know what papers are like. But no, I didn't speak to anybody else. You know, if they could agree a fee and sort things out, then I was happy to sign.
Yeah, I think we had to save the pennies during your loan move, because I don't think we exactly splashed the cash around that time. Because you did sign permanently for about $250,000 in the end, and you went on to play 46 games in all competitions in what was pretty much your first full season on the pitch after that injury in the timeout. I mean, did you ever have concerns after you'd come back that you'd find it difficult to play that amount of games?
No, like I said, all it did was I altered the way I played a little bit. I was a bit more of a holding midfield player, whereas before when I was at Everton, I was more of a box-to-box midfield player. And that was really just probably from the restriction. But no, like I said, in terms of the ankle and the injury, I just looked after it. You know, I knew what I could do and what I couldn't do, and just managed it, really.
You've answered my next question, which is great, but because I was going to ask whether it was the way Dennis Smith asked you to play, because watching the footage of you in an Everton strip, you know, constantly kind of getting into the box of those forward runs, and then it seems to be that you either consciously adapted your game, came to Sunderland and just made things tick in the middle with Gary Owers and Armstrong doing all the running.
Yeah, I mean, they were the young lads at the time, so they had the legs, and it suited me the way, like I said, with the restrictions, really. You know, I would have been 26, 27 then. Yeah. So, and it worked, you know. They trusted me with the ball, and I was sort of, like you said, the playmaker, really.
Yeah, well, as you mentioned, I mean, really young side. You know, we've mentioned Gary Owers and Gordon Armstrong, but obviously Marco Gabbadini was young, and we had a lot of young players coming through. But, I mean, even, as you mentioned, kind of 26, 27 when you signed again, did Dennis Smith kind of put any onus on you to help develop those players, especially kind of Gary Owers and Armstrong, who you played alongside in the field?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to think, hopefully, you know, later on in my career, in terms of, you know, being captains and managing and coaching, is, you know, that would be one of the things that not only were they buying somebody that on the field, but off the field as well, in terms of how you look after yourself, a winning mentality. You know, once you've experienced it, you know, you want to pass that experience on, what's right and what's wrong. And like you said, there were some good young players there who listened, who wanted to get better, who wanted to learn. And it was a little bit of a voice of, you know, of a captain, of a leader, which you need on the field as well as off the field as well.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, obviously we'd come up from Division 3, finished mid-table the season before, and I think you'd only kind of really added yourself, and I think it was Paul Hardiman as well, but I think putting you into that midfield with, you know, the young lads like Owers and Armstrong, who were 20-21, and I think Colin Pascoe was quite young on the left as well. I think he was only about 23-24 at the time as well. So, yeah. I mean, I think as Dennis Smith kind of put it himself a couple of times, I think you were kind of that final piece in the jigsaw just to make, you know, kind of to keep things ticking over in midfield while they did all the running. So,
yeah, and I think it worked. It worked well. You know, like I said, they were very, very keen to listen and learn and learn good habits, and it was a good place to be. You know, I like I said, I enjoyed my time working with the young lads and giving them my experience, even though, you know, I had been out for a while at England international, won things, so I knew what it took, and I enjoyed passing that experience on to them.
Yeah, well, that season, of course, ends with the playoffs, and fate pits us against Newcastle United as they finished third and we finished sixth. And I'm fairly certain the FA were eternally relieved at not having the prospect of some of the Newcastle fans invading London for a bank holiday weekend. But I mean, considering all the cup finals and international games you played in, are those two games against Newcastle in that playoffs up there with some of the top kind of big games you had in your career?
Yeah, I mean, obviously derbies up here, you know, very similar to the Liverpool derbies as well, you know, very passionate. And I think the way it went with the first leg, I think Newcastle thought that, you know, they'd done their job really. And we went there, to be fair, and we had an outstanding night, a lot of pressure. Obviously the crowd came on, they had to clear the crowd, and we managed to, you know, get an unbelievable result, because I don't think anybody really fancied us going there and getting that result. And then obviously brilliant to go to Wembley, you know.
Yeah, I mean, was that the mentality after that first leg? Was it just thinking, you know, everybody's written us off here and we're going to go there and you know, cause an upset?
Well, I think not internally, but externally, you know, I think anybody would have said, oh, it's going to be a tough ask now going to St. James's with a full house, you know. But like you said, we went there, we played some real good stuff, and we got some, you know, got two great goals, and under a lot of pressure. It was a fantastic night, but it was only the half a job done, really, because you've got to go to Wembley and finish it off, you know.
Did you manage to get off the pitch okay when the fans came on at the end?
To be fair, the ref was brilliant. You know, there was a lot of talk, and they said, there's no way this game's not going to finish. We can't, you know, we can't have supporters, because, you know, if we get in this position and people invade the pitch, then we're never going to finish football. So, they, you know, we waited, cleared the pitch, and the ref said, no, I'm going to play the time. I'll give your goalkeeper a shout when I'm getting close, because he's obviously the furthest away to get off the pitch. It was a referee and a police matter, and it was, you know, it was a question that, you know, we're going to have to wait till it's cleared, and all we had to do was concentrate and make sure we finished the game and got the result. And luckily enough, hopefully we all got off safely, and I must admit we did stay at the ground for a long time, for, you know, for obvious reasons, you know.
Yeah, and I think afterwards did the coach head straight into Sunderland Town Centre after the game?
No, I don't think so. Off the top of my head, I think having a night like that, I think we're just pleased all to get home and look forward to the final, you know, at Wembley, which was brilliant, you know.
Yeah, it was the first season of the Wembley playoff finals.
And
it was just kind of one of those days. We didn't get going, and then early on, Calderwood kind of took Gabbadini out of the game, and then we had Tony Norman to thank that we only lost by a single goal in the end.
Yeah, I just remember it was. They were a good side at the time, yeah. And I think we were, I wouldn't say well beaten, but I think they deserved to win on the day.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure about, I mean, even before or after the game, I mean, were there any whispers that, you know, regardless of what the result might be, it wouldn't be the end of it with the kind of Swindon's financial problems?
I don't know. Like you said, it was a strange time. And then obviously when they got the result, and then there was a lot of stuff going on. And then, you know, at the end of the day, they were found guilty, and that was it, you know. So, you know, it was brilliant for us and not so great for them.
Yeah, I mean, because usually playoff finals one of the best ways to get promoted, but it was a strange way to get promoted that we couldn't kind of celebrate it as a...
No, it was a little bit surreal, but ultimately you take it.
Yeah. I mean, we're never going to turn it down, but Dennis Smith said... it was probably too soon, and the club weren't in a position to back him up. I mean, would you think that's fair?
Well, he would know in terms of the ins and outs behind the scene. You know, as a player, you're just thinking, great, brilliant promotion. You know, next level. Here we go. Really, in terms of players, you don't know the politics that goes on behind the scenes. Obviously, Dennis would know that more than us. You know.
I mean, in that season, we played some great football. We beat Manchester United and a couple of great games against Spurs, but I mean, that season we actually managed to lose 11 games where we took the lead. I mean, do you think, was that a sign of the style of football we played, or was it a sign of, because we had a really young squad still at that point as well?
I think probably a little bit of naivety, but I know Roker Park was we made it a real difficult place to come and play. We enjoyed playing there, and like you said, you know, young, hungry, but we, you know, I think we did okay, held our own to a degree, you know.
Yeah,
and that's possibly why, you know, Dennis mentioned to you that he probably wanted to strengthen it, and the money wasn't there. I don't know.
You know, so one of those if only, because we obviously went down to the last day at Main Road, which is obviously still talked about. You know, with Sunderland fans, estimated to be about 15,000 there, and I think Dennis Smith again, he said that it convinced him to have another go. What are your memories of that day when we went down?
Well, like you said, when you carry that sort of support, you know, it's amazing, really. I don't know. It's difficult to explain the disappointment, you know, because you're on such a high from, you know, from circumstances of getting up there, and then you go on such a low. But yeah, again, in football, you have to dust yourself down and go again. My experience, like I said, of being out injured for 2.5 years is you've got to go again. You've got to think positively and look forward to the following season.
Yeah. I mean, you say that you were back in Division One with Sunderland, you know, got us there. I mean, having that taste of it, obviously the disappointment of going back down. I mean, was there any kind of discussion? Was it just simply you didn't think twice and you were staying with the club, or did you fancy, you know, maybe a move to another Division One club?
No, to be honest, it didn't cross my mind. Like you said, it was dust yourself down and go again, really. And it never really crossed my mind, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, well, the next season, you know, back in Division Two, and Dennis Smith again hadn't really been backed in the transfer market and hadn't been able to kind of bring anyone else in. And he's forced to sell Marco Gabbadini early on in that season. But kind of just to pause on the subject of Marco Gabbadini, I mean, he was obviously kind of ruthless for Sunderland, you know, scored 20 plus goals, and I think 3 or 4 seasons straight, and then scored, I think he scored double figures in the, or almost double figures in the Division One. I mean, from that early potential, do you think it was just one of those things where he kind of moved on and it didn't quite work at Palace, and maybe he didn't kind of achieve what that kind of early potential promised?
Well, like I said early on in the conversation, when you move club, you know, he'd been at York, came to a big club in Sunderland, things have gone well. It's a, you know, every signing, every manager will tell you, every signing is a gamble. You're buying somebody and you hope, you know, when Gabby's going to score goals because his record said he's going to do that. But you've got all the other stuff as well, moving, new teammates. So all that contributes to whether it's a successful move or it isn't. You know, sometimes it works, sometimes it don't.
You know, Dennis Smith does sell Mark Gabbadini, and he brings in John Byrne, Don Goodman, Anton Rogan, but he still couldn't quite get us going. And then just after Christmas, after going down 3-0 at Oxford, Bomery sacks Dennis Smith. I mean, how much of that was a surprise, bearing in mind, you know, what he'd done for Sunderland over the previous years?
Nothing surprises me in football. And obviously, you know, prior to that, like you said, he obviously thought, you know, if I sell Gabbers and I can bring those players in you've mentioned, it brings me 4 or 5 players in and, you know, we'll go again. But, you know, Dennis knows it's all about winning when you're in management, as I know myself. So I'm sure he would have been disappointed at the time that he wasn't given more time. But sometimes in football, you know, things that you don't get time, and they made that decision, you know.
Yeah. And then Malcolm Crosby gets the job as a caretaker manager. And even though we still struggle in the league, we go on that amazing cup run with that never-to-be-forgotten quarter-final replay against Chelsea at Rucker Park. I mean, that year, was it just one of those unexplained football phenomena where we could turn it on in the cup that year, but we still struggled in the league because we had some really good players in that squad?
Yeah, it was... And I think sometimes in cup games, and I think we sort of proved that. You mentioned the Chelsea, you know, when we're at home, it's a big night, big crowd, expectations. We got some great results, and we couldn't then recharge our batteries and go again in the league, you know. And that's always a difficult balance between you want a good cup run, but you obviously got to look over your shoulder with the league, you know, your league's your bread and butter. But it was a magnificent run. And to get to the cup final was fantastic, like you said, with the players we had, and fantastic for the club as well.
Yeah, it's your fourth FA Cup final. I mean, were you passing anything on to the younger lads to say this is what it's like, or were you just letting them experience it for themselves?
Well, I was hoping it was going to be one that I was going to win, to be honest, having lost the last three. So, but again, Wembley, you know, people talk about, you know, players that have played in their career, never played an FA Cup final. I was lucky enough to play in 4. Didn't win one, but fantastic experience. Again, I'd like to think, because I'd been there and seen it and done it, the experience helped in the quarterfinals and the semis and ultimately in the final. But if memory serves me right, we could have been 1-0 up in the first half. I think we were the better side. But in the end, I think their quality told, you know.
As soon as Liverpool got that opening goal, Michael Thomas, I think it was, I think that we couldn't get the ball off them after that. But that first half, we had a couple of good chances in that first half.
Yeah, definitely. And I think they made a couple of subs, and that, I think that sort of changed the game a little bit. But, you know, I think we hit the post, if things go in, and all of a sudden it's a different kettle of fish, you know.
I mean, after that cup final, you bizarrely find yourself out of contract. As the club's only offered you a 1-year deal, and this was kind of before the Bosman ruling, of course. But so you're allowed to talk to the other clubs. But I mean, for me, obviously another example of how badly the club was run at the time, because I can't really get my head around the fact that you weren't kind of going through those conversations earlier in the season. I mean, was there nothing discussed kind of prior to the end of the season? Was it not ongoing throughout the season, those discussions?
Well, the way it worked in those days is they had to offer you a contract by the third Saturday in May. And I think the cup final was that, probably third Saturday in May. And my contract was up. They'd had a board meeting, I think, prior to the cup final, because obviously Crozza was... he was a caretaker manager at the time, or he could have been main manager, I'm not quite sure. Obviously, Crozza wanted to keep me, but what happens is you get back from the cup final, and there's obviously a letter, and they offer me a 1-year contract. A lot of it to do was because he's 30, but that's what, you know, the club are entitled to offer you what they want. I thought I was worth more than a 1-year contract, so in those days you had to officially turn it down, which I did, took the paperwork in, and what happens then is your name gets circulated on the list, retainer list. And then I got a phone call through a friend in Liverpool saying, we've just had the retainer list out and your name's on it. They're not quite sure, you know, is that right? Is it true? I said, yeah, I've turned the contract down. I can speak to who I want. And that's how it went, really. I was asked to go and speak to Kevin at Newcastle. So I just said to the wife, just put the answer machine on and I'm going to speak to Kevin. And as you can imagine, being the Sunderland captain and going to speak to Kevin was always going to be difficult. You know, being a captain of any clubs, you know, is special and no different than being a captain at Sunderland. You know, really enjoyed the time there and the respect that comes with it, you know. I met Kevin and the first thing he said to me, if you walk out of the room now and you want to sign, I quite understand. We agreed a 3-year contract, and then the following day had a medical again, which I didn't pass. And Kevin spoke to Bob Murray to try and sort a fee out, which they couldn't agree. And then it went to a tribunal in those days.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I just feel it just shows how much of a basket case we were as a football club at the time. And I think I read somewhere that you didn't just kind of send it back to them, but you actually took it to the club, you know, and give it back to them, you know, in person, because you wanted to actually give your reaction to that contract offer.
Well, I was making sure that I was doing things properly, you know what I mean? And I handed it back in, and obviously they were surprised, but you know that was their right, their entitlement, same as me. I felt I was worth more than a year's contract, and that's how it was. And we went to a tribunal, and I think the fee was set again at $250, and I went to Newcastle and scored on my debut. So I always knew it was going to be a massive move. I always knew that if things didn't work out, I was going to get it, obviously being at Sunderland. But I had 4 fantastic years there. You know, that was the entertainers. And really enjoyed my time there.
Yeah, and just in that on that tribunal, wasn't it a case Sunderland asked for more money, and the point was raised, well, you know, why did you only offer him 1 year if he's worth that much?
Yeah, there was a lot of evidence put forward to for the do's and the don'ts and whys and why nots. Ultimately, it was an independent tribunal. They listened to both sides of the story, and then they set the fee. You know, and that, like I said, that was it. It was. Once the fee was set, they paid it and we moved on, you know. But again, it was, I enjoyed my time there at Sunderland, but it wasn't to be, and I moved on, you know.
2 more years in the Premier League you had with Newcastle as well, which is incredible. And then we get to 1995, and Peter Reid is about to lead Sunderland as manager for his first full season. And I think it's pretty much his first phone call was to you to try and bring you in as kind of player assistant manager. I mean, did you just jump at the chance to move into the management side, or did you want did part of you just want to keep concentrating fully on being a player?
Well, to be honest, I think I might have been 35, and we're in the Premiership in Newcastle. Things have gone well, and I knew, again, from my experience, I wasn't going to play as many games as I'd like to. Spoke with Reedy, who obviously had a play with and knew, and he wanted to bring me back, and that was my first sort of step into management, is going back as assistant player manager. And again, I came back. I wasn't quite sure on the reception I would get, but I think the one thing that I've learned, obviously in the Northeast, is you know, people judge you what you do on the field. And we came back, and it was brilliant. You know, it was my first taste working with Bobby Saxton and Reedy on the management side. But first and foremost, I was there as a player, you know. And as soon as the training finished, we got in the office, we discussed things, and then Reedy would say, "Right, off you go. Get your feet up, big game tomorrow." But it was a real insight to, you know, what happens behind the scenes in management.
Yeah, I mean, how did you find that role, you know, of being one of the lads, you know, out on the pitch, but part of the management team as well? Was it difficult to adjust to that?
No, what I did, I was, from the outset when I came in, I was very conscious of that. So I changed in the management. During the week when I trained, I was always in the management changing room. The only time I changed was on a Saturday or a Wednesday when I was with the players as a match day. So I didn't want any tickle-tackle or anything like that. Mm. Everybody knew that I was part of the management team, but they also knew I was only going to get picked on merit if I produced the goods on a match day, which is how I'd want it to be, and that's how it was with Reedy, you know. So just because I was assistant manager didn't guarantee me a place. But what it did do was it gives, again, Reedy's eyes and ears on the field as well, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, you said you need to do it out on the pitch, and I'm fairly certain, going off memory, I think you won kind of player of the month for the first three or four months that season. And you went on to play 44 games in total, as we kind of won the title after being relegation candidates the season before. I mean, how special was that title, you know, coming back, and especially because it was kind of out of the blue, with kind of changing our fortune so quickly. So was that a pretty special championship?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was quite ironic, really, where, you know, I'm 30 years of age. They offer me a year because they're not quite sure about my ankle and things like that. And I'm coming back at 35. And like you said, we're getting promotion and playing and goals. And again, when I came back, never passed the medical and things like that. So, really enjoyed that. Again, we broke apart. It was a good place to be, really. It was, again, building, you know, with some good young players, some experienced players, and obviously the stadium was then starting to come along as well.
Mm. I mean, that impact that you had, was there any kind of apologies for the boardroom saying, actually, you know, we should offer you a better
contract? No, that's football. You move on, you know. And I know, you know, even to this day with Bob Murray, when I've been back to the ground and shake his hand, we'll have a cup of tea or a drink or whatever. That's, you know, they made the decision and I made my decision, but you just move on. That's football, you know. But I was, you know, I've had, like you said before the intro, I've had three spells there, you know, 7 years, a big chunk of my career there. So, you know, I was delighted to go back and bring some success.
Yeah, as you said, I mean, 34 and you're ready for another season in the Premier League, and it's the last one at Roker Park. But I mean, that one, you saw it from a player's point of view with Alan Durbin and later Dennis Smith when they were kind of really backed at Sunderland to push on. I mean, do you think specifically during that season in the Premier League with the move to the new stadium and the speed of the progress you and Peter Reid were making, do you think you suffered something similar that year?
Again, it's, you know, I was privy to some of it, but not all of it, because my sort of concentration was on the pitch. And I know Reedy and the staff were working really hard to try and get people in, and there was a balancing act, like there is very much today in terms of stadium and players, you know. And I think that was exactly the same with Reedy. He was trying to, you know, he was conscious of the stadium, but obviously wanted money for players and trying to get the right players in at the right price, and making sure that the ones that came in, you know, did what they said on the tin. So it was a difficult time, but. And at the same time, you've got to win football matches as well, you know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that season in the Premier League, you were actually an ever-present during that season in the Premier League. And, I mean, unfortunately, we have, you know, pretty horrific injuries to Niall Quinn and Tony Courton as well. I mean, that luck seemed to be against us quite a lot that year. But, I mean, we end up getting relegated. But how big a blow was that to yourself and Peter Reid?
Yeah, I mean, I believe you've just mentioned two sort of major, you know, players in the team. You know, anybody that loses those two types of players and characters is very, very difficult to replace, you know. And that was a blow, you know, because there were long-term injuries as well.
And how did you find the move to the Stadium of Light and the move from Roker Park? Because obviously an ex-player going back quite a way. I mean, did you feel any kind of attachment to the place?
To be honest, when you think about it now, you know, there's been a lot of clubs have gone to new stadium, and I would imagine Sunderland was probably one of the very, very earliest ones that made that move, you know. It was always going to be difficult leaving a place like Roker Park because it was so, the atmosphere was brilliant and it was known for, you know, tough on it. And it's like you find most clubs find it difficult to, when they move to a new stadium, to create that. I remember the opening, there was about 47, 48,000 in against Ajax. It was a magnificent stadium, which it still is. So again, in terms of moving on, you know, you have to move on and progress.
Yeah. And you played in that game against Ajax, and you play a couple of games at the beginning of the next season. But then you, I think, well, surprisingly at the time, I think you left for a similar post at Fulham in the division below, where I think Kevin Keegan was there at the time. And I think you're obviously offered more playing time because I don't think you were kind of as never present in that following season. I mean, was that decision to move to Fulham, was that just purely to extend your playing career?
Yeah, and you know, we had the conversation really, and we knew in terms of the age of Premiership, the way it was, I wasn't going to play loads of games. But you know, I go back to when you've not played, when you've missed 2.5 years, a big chunk, and you missed the buzz of that Saturday, you know, I wanted to play as much football as possible, and that was, you know, that was the reason why I left to go on and play. And I think you know the record tells me that I think I went down there and played two full seasons or virtually two full seasons down there. So, and again, enjoyed my time there. It was brilliant. We missed out on the playoffs the first year. And then we got promotion the following year.
Yeah. I mean, was that a difficult decision? Because obviously, I mean, the pull of having that extended playing career, but I mean, you know, you were kind of 2 years into that partnership with Peter Reid, and it had been successful because you weren't really expected to take us up in that first season. So was that a really tough decision to move to Fulham?
Yeah. Obviously, Peter didn't want me to go, but, you know, he'd been a player, he'd had injuries, and he understood that I wanted to play, and that's, you know, it was a big decision because I could have stayed and obviously not played as much and then done more on the management side. But you know, I still felt as if I had something to offer on the field, and you know, he was reluctant, but he understood, and you know, we still speak very frequently today anyway, so we're still best of mates. There was nothing animosity about it. He fully understood I wanted to go and play football.
Yeah. Anyway, as you said, it was a good move to Fulham, and kind of you stayed active in the game. But then a long gap until your next spell at Sunderland, when you return again as a development coach at the academy. I think it was in 2013. So how did you end up coming back?
Well, I still kept my place in the northeast, and obviously Jed McMee was there when I was there. Alec Dickman was there, so there was a lot of players there. Previous people have been there, but when I took over as manager at Fulham for a year, and then I was out of work, and then went to Halifax and managed there for just over a year, and then came back, and I always had an affinity with the academy, you know, trying to develop players even when I was a manager at Fulham and also at Halifax. I always looked to try and get players from the academies and with the contacts and bring young players on. So I went in and did some work individually with Jed on a sort of part-time basis, which I really enjoyed. The lad Barley, funny enough, he was 13 at the time, worked very closely with him. And then the opportunity came to work in the academy, which I really enjoyed, you know.
Yeah, and I'm sure you were used to from your first three spells at the club, but as always, the club seemed to be in constant turmoil again, churning through managers. And then in 2015, Dick Advocaat asks you to kind of fill a role with the first team. I mean, did that transition happen straight away when he was appointed? Because I think it was touch and go whether he was staying on in that summer.
Yeah, Lee Congleton was the sporting director at the time, and I didn't know Lee. Lee obviously took over the role there. And he'd seen me work in the academy, obviously knew of my history of being there as a player and a captain, assistant manager. And when Gus Poyet left, they brought Dick in, and they asked me, I'd never met Dick before, look, he's only got, I think it was 10, 11 games to go. Would you help him? So, yeah, brilliant. So I met Dick. He was the general. He was brilliant. He really appreciated, because you can imagine coming into a club, don't know anybody, and I tried to give him as much help as possible in terms of the players and the younger players and what was needed. And it was an unbelievable journey, really. We managed to stay up, which was incredible, really, because I think at the time we looked as though we were going to go down.
Yeah, well, I think that was the big surge to get him to stay on that summer, but it didn't quite work out the season after that. But that led to Sam Allardyce taking over the reins. And I know he'd worked at the club under Peter Reid when you were there, so it seemed from the outside a natural transition when you stayed on as his assistant. Was that the case?
I knew Sam obviously before, didn't know him as well as I do now. And he came in and he was very open and honest. He said, "Brace, I know you, but I don't know you. I'm going to have a look about and look at all the staff. If you want to make changes, I'll tell you." And I think he was about a week, 10 days into the job. And then he pulled me in the office one day and he said, "Brace, I like what I see. I want you to be my assistant manager. I want Robbie to move up with first team coach." And that, he said, "Look, let's go on the journey. Let's see where it takes us." And again, we managed to stay up, which was unbelievable, really.
Yeah.
And then obviously England came knocking for Big Sam, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you must have been, I imagine, you know, even within the setup, because I mean, I know the fans were looking forward to that season, that first full season under Sam Allardyce, and I imagine it was the same behind the scenes as well.
Yeah, it was. We managed to stay up. We were playing we had some good players in. We were playing some good stuff. I mean, the last week of the season was incredible. You know, the games at home, the results we got.
Yeah.
To stay up again was like winning the FA Cup. It was an incredible atmosphere. Really enjoyed working with Big Sam. But obviously, England comes knocking and then he leaves. And this similar sort of thing happened when David Moyes came in. Again, he came in and sat with the staff and said, "Look, don't really know you, but I'm just going to have a look and have a feel, and then I'll make my decision." And again, he pulled me in and Robbie and said, "Look, you know, I want you to work with me as assistant first team coach." And we went from there, really.
Yeah. I mean, just going into that season, do you think, because it always seemed that we never really recovered from the shock of Allardyce leaving, and we were kind of always playing catch up. I mean, did it have that feeling within the club that we were playing catch up because we were so disrupted by Allardyce leaving?
I think it was difficult. Everything had been done pre-season. We were out in Austria and Big Sam came out. He spent a couple of days and he was going back. And then he went with England. So there was, I wouldn't say turmoil, but obviously pre-season was going on. I think me and Robbie took the game at Rotherham. We were just doing what we needed to do. And we were just waiting to see. But in terms of the window and players and things like that, it was obviously, time was ticking on and the season was starting and there wasn't much time to bed things in. But, you know, again, David came in and we got on with it.
Yeah, I mean, it must have been difficult so close to the season if there's a change of ideals, kind of so close to the beginning of the season.
Yeah, I mean, there's never a good time. But like you said, I think everybody's expectations with Sam doing such a great job staying up and the place was jumping and obviously, you know, he leaves and then there's that uncertainty which you always get when a manager goes and who's coming, who's going and for the players and the staff. So, you know, another sort of turmoil, like you said, from going back sort of 18 months when Gus was there and then Dick comes in and then Dick keeps us up and then he's staying and he goes. So there's a lot of stuff going on, which is not great for the club.
I mean, tough year being rooted to the bottom of the Premier League under David Moyes, but obviously it was unclear what was happening with the ownership of the club as well. I mean, it was towards the end of that season, was that, you know, fairly uncertain what the future would hold for obviously David Moyes, but yourself as well?
Yeah, I mean, you know, as soon as you, playing's the best part of it, you know, and having been a player and sampled it and all you're worried about is yourself and turning it up and make sure, you know, you do what's best for yourself and the team. Once you go into management, things do change. There's an awful lot more going on. But one of real disappointment for the relegation. And it was a tough pill to swallow because of all the uncertainty, what was going on. Unbelievable support, home and away. And it's a bit like, you know, we managed to do it twice, you know, with Dick and then with Sam. And then obviously unfortunately, we didn't do it with David, which was always going to be a big, big ask, you know, to keep doing what you were doing to try and survive.
Yeah. I mean, had you made a decision whether you were going to stay or leave or wait for the club's decision on that?
Well, what happens is, you know, David went to the owner, he had a meeting in London. We stayed down because we had the league managers, and, you know, David said that he was leaving, and Martin Bain at the time just asked me and Robbie if we could hold the fort, and which we did do through the summer. And obviously they were looking for a new management, whether they were going to bring their own people. You know, that wasn't our decision. The only thing I would say is when they made the decision, Martin was good as gold, and everything was done properly, you know.
Yeah, and then obviously you left your fourth spell with the club. Huge ups and downs at the club, but you spent 10 years pretty much at the club in total, on and off the pitch. I mean, looking back, I mean, how much have you enjoyed, I mean, that time? Obviously, as I said, huge ups and downs, but did you enjoy it overall?
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, like I said, you know, going up as a 19-year-old, the Roker Raw, you know, had some real good times, you know, obviously some disappointing times as well, but a real affinity for the club, and I felt as if every time I put the shirt on, they knew what they were going to get from me. You know, assistant manager, you know, led the team out at Wembley, the cup final, you know, so there was more ups than downs, but obviously disappointed the way it finished in the end with a relegation.
Yeah, not a great way to end it. And obviously kind of having spanned so many eras at Sunderland, I mean, what do you see when you look at the club now?
Just one of this real disappointment because, you know, I know it's a fantastic club, fantastic supporters. If they get it right, whoever gets it right, it's a top six club, you know. And the North East is just hungry for success. And, you know, tasted it with Reedy, you know. So know what it's like in the cup final. I remember coming back after the final against Liverpool, where we get off at Carville, we get to the Ramside, and then, you know, there's 500,000 people, 400,000 people turn up on the Roker front, you know. And when we win the championship, you know, all the people that turn out, it's, you know, that's what they live for. And it's a great, you know, it's a great shame where it is, but hopefully somebody will come along and do what's right, and hopefully in years to come it'll go back where it should be, you know, back in the Premiership and battling in the trying to get in the top six, because that's the only place to be.
Yeah, I was down the seafront both those days. Yeah, it seems like a long time ago now. But
yeah, it's brilliant occasions, you know. Brilliant.
Yeah, but I mean, just quickly on the current day. I mean, I was reading that you're now an elite development coach at Grow Football and a consultant for Tottenham Hotspur. So, I mean, can you tell us a bit more about what you're doing now?
Yeah, it's sort of my third spell as a consultant at Tottenham. I work as an elite development coach, so I work with the 23s all the way down to the 8s. So we work on individual players. Great place to work, fantastic facilities, and Tottenham do produce players, which I really enjoy. And then there's the other company, LVH Sport. We've got an app coming out, which hopefully should get launched at the end of July, which is a fantastic app we've been working on for the last 2.5 years, which will be free to download, and it gives you a time and a score, and it's a real training app. We've just managed to sign, I'm sure some of the younger people will call F2 stylists, the two boys. We've managed to sign them. So hopefully by the end of July, you'll see their stuff on the YouTube and doing all their tricks with using the app. So it's very busy. I still live in the Northeast and I commute. I think obviously I can't see myself moving from here. Settled in really well. Some good people, but ultimately I enjoy getting on the field and hopefully this stage of my career is trying to develop players for the Premiership.
And have the youth setups been able to keep ticking over for the current situation?
Yeah, what we did, we worked right the way up to the end of May, and what we did is on Zoom and Teams with the staff, but all the players that are programmed to do, they all had to video it and send it in. June is usually their 4 weeks off, they get 2 weeks complete rest, and then they'll be into their sort of pre-season programme. But no football, as long as you've got a ball and you've got somewhere to do it, then you can get out and practice, you know.
Brilliant. Well, all the best with that, Paul. And on that note, I just want to say thank you very much for your time. As I said, you were a bit of a hero of mine when I was young, and I've absolutely loved the chance to get to speak to you about those great times. I think, you know, you were the kind of final pieces in the jigsaw on the promotions under Dennis Smith and with Peter Reid. So I've just really appreciated you spending your time with us. So thank you very much.
No, I appreciate speaking to you. And then, like you said, hopefully someone can be successful in the future.
Thank you very much. Chris. I was trying to get through it quickly so you can get the start of the match.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.